Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Welcome. Oh, I don't know what just happened there. Welcome back to Season Comic Book Nation. I am Cuffy Outlaw here with my co-hosts Janelle Wheeler and Matthew Aguilar.
Hey, guys.
What up?
Today, we have a lot to do. We got a lot on the Marvel side as we react to the Shang-Chi, that's how we say it, trailer. We also got to talk about the Falcon and Winter Soldier finale. We're dropping our theories before it all goes down this Friday. We got to talk about a big new casting in the MCU. And we also got to, of course, talk DC and Marvel's latest comic releases. So we are going to get into all that. But up first, this weekend, there's a big movie dropping on HBO Max and in theaters. It is the Mortal Kombat reboot. We have not seen a thing about it, but we did have somebody who has seen it and is here to give us just some first spoiler-free impressions. Welcome to the show. You guys, a lot of you guys have been asking for him, so we had to get him in here. Daily Distraction host, comedian extraordinaire, Mr. Chris Killian is with us today.
Yeah.
Wow, that's such a nice intro. Thanks, Kofi. I appreciate it.
Yeah, when they gave me like the kind of like tag card that they paid me to read for our employee guests, they were like, this is what we've come up with. And I was like, that is nice. I can definitely sell it.
I hope you got paid well.
No, I'm just kidding. Not at all in my salary.
So with Mortal Kombat, I've seen it twice, and please stop. I've had a lot of coffee this morning, so I'm so pumped to talk about it. So you guys stop me if I start to say like too much stuff. You're like, oh no, it's a spoiler or whatever. Just please feel free to cut me off. But I'm so excited for everybody to see it. I think it's amazing. I might be biased because I was down in Australia for the set visit. And so I saw a lot of this stuff in person, and then I, you know, then COVID happened, and you know, we couldn't see it, and it's been delayed. And I've been telling everybody for over a year that this is like going to be a super.
Not to interrupt you, but I mean, to be fair, that can sometimes work in a bad way for you, right? When you go down to set and you see things, and then you have to see the finished product. I've been let down by quite a few movies that way, but it's good to hear that it might be the opposite for you.
Yeah, it might be the opposite for me. It is the opposite for me. I definitely love the movie. I think it's a great, great, fun movie, and I'm really trying not to spoil anything because there's a lot of cool stuff in the film. But I also got to watch the second time with the original Scorpion from the 95 Mortal Kombat movie. Chris Casamassa like sat on my couch with me and watched it. So that was like a big geek out moment. So then I'm like, well, I just love the shit out of this movie. Can I say that? I don't know if I can say that.
No, but it's too late now.
It's too late now. I'm sorry, guys. I love the...
No, we actually got a PG-13 rating for season 3. So you
did
can...
Did we really?
Yeah, we can push a Nolan Dark Knight kind of line right now. So no, I think we'll get like this. One. I did tell you that.
Okay. That's the first one. This is a PG-13 show. That's the only one that I get. I love the movie. I will say that like Kano steals it. Like Kano is hilarious in this movie. For me, I think that he's probably the best part of the movie. Sub-Zero is like downright scary at times. Like he's almost like a movie monster, kind of like Michael Myers or Jason Voorhees. Like he's very like stalkerish in his goals, and I found Joe Taslim as Sub-Zero to be amazing. Cole Young is a new addition to the Mortal Kombat family. He's played by Louis Tan. He's great. Everybody is great. I really enjoy the movie. And as far as like action goes, I mean, if you're a Mortal Kombat fan and you just want to, that's the one thing that we've been missing, right? From Mortal Kombat movies for the last like 30 years, is they've always tried to like kid friendly it up and kind of make it PG-13. This is R, like this is hard R, like the, like some of the fatalities in this movie are like legit. So just a lot of fun stuff. I don't know if you guys have any questions about it. I'm afraid I'm going to start spilling too much, too many details, but I had a lot of fun with it. I enjoyed it more the second time that I watched it. I'm excited to watch it this Friday in theaters. So
we know, I mean, it's no secret that video games get a stigma in the movie business is kind of having the video game movie curse. I mean, we feel like we're starting to come out of that in some ways, but this doesn't feel kind of like weighed down by the games or its need to kind of wink and say, we are based on a video game or anything like that. Kind of interruptions to the otherwise, you know, what looks to be a real cinematic effort to create Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, I think that like the video game curse to me is a little like that's kind of old news. I feel like there's a few movies that have kind of broken that mold over the, you know, last few. Even the first Mortal Kombat is like it doesn't age particularly well, especially with the CGI, but it's still a fun movie. You know what I mean? Like I still like that movie. We had Sonic the Hedgehog, you know, which was kind of, you know, a fun movie. Like we've had decent video game movies at this point now, so I don't think that the video game curse still applies, but as far as Mortal Kombat, like the new one goes, I mean, it's a great first ever. It is not a perfect movie. There are things about it that I was a little frustrated with, but overall, I think it's like a step in the right direction, especially when you consider where we came from with like Mortal Kombat Annihilation being like the last big screen, you know, version of Mortal Kombat we got.
Do not know what you are referring to.
You guys know what I'm referring to, right?
Of course.
Yes. Just like
no, I don't know. I've never heard of a movie by that name.
So I am actually quite curious because you said Kano steals the movie. And I did not ever think I would hear that sentence in regards to anything.
Josh Austin is like, if there is a star-making performance in this movie, it is that guy. Like he is going to come out of this, I think, is like I think a lot of people are going to be talking about how good Kano was.
That's insane.
Nice.
I'm
not that surprised because Kano is like one of those characters. I feel like you either get really right or you get like really wrong and it just is horrible. And just his delivery in the trailer, in the Red Band trailer at the end where he like rips the heart out of something and he's just like, Kano wins, you effing beauty. And I was like, that is such a hard line because that is a video game line. Mm-hmm. It's like a cheesy action like one-liner and he sells it and made it like really funny. Kind of making this character feel just like a scumbag that you would root for, you know? And I kind of dug that. So
he's definitely a love to hate him kind of guy. He's a lot of fun and a comedic relief for most of the movie, I think.
You did reference the original Mortal Kombat. And I know that like in that original movie, Sonya Blade was like a big part of that. What can you say about her character performance? Like how's that stack up?
Just as big a part in this movie. Like Sonya Blade's very important and she's got some real cool moments to shine. Jessica plays her and she's awesome. I got to talk to her. She does a great job as Sonya. And I think that the only reason I don't reference her is because like it's like a shining part of the movie is because Kano pretty much steals it from everybody that he's in because he just has some great lines in there. But Sonya definitely has her moments as well. I'm excited for people to see what she does as Sonya Blade. And they're clearly setting up for a like Warner Brothers wants this to be a franchise, right? I mean, they're clearly setting up for a second movie, and I think that they are definitely headed in the right direction.
I feel like with Mortal Kombat, I'm just going to admit this. I'm going to age myself. The original Mortal Kombat movie is one of my top five favorite movies of all time. So as a kid, like I get very sentimental with movies. So for me, I bought the soundtrack for that movie and I would play it out and do like choreography to every single song and envision which character
I was with you up until that sentence. I was with you.
So curious what the soundtrack's going to be like for this. Do you like, how did you feel about the music?
The music is amazing in this movie. And I'm so happy that they keep that Mortal Kombat theme. I mean, to me, that's like, it's such an iconic, and it's more directed to the movie. It's not the video games, right? They made that whole techno track for the movie. And so the fact that that's kind of stayed and it, you know, in the way that the Spider-Man theme has kind of stuck around through the years for Spider-Man, it's the same thing here with Mortal Kombat. I mean, there's a few, it's like a very orchestra version of it. It's not techno like it was back in 95, but it's a, they definitely hit that dun, 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 you know, note a few times in the movie in the right spot. So
and they still have the screamer, Mortal Kombat.
No, I don't think the scream is in there. Really? I think the notes are in there. Like, you know what song it is.
You must provide your own scream.
Okay, I'll do it in the theater loudly.
That's what we, it's just got to be like, it's just going to be a crowd interaction thing where that you crowd chimes in.
Oh, please don't. Because if that happens, like someone's going to be saying, Tusty, and like in the corner, and like other people, like there's so many of those callbacks in Mortal Kombat. Like you'll never hear
it. So good though.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to, I mean, it's got to happen. After a while, once you're famous enough, you know, any musical act, you don't sing your own chorus anymore. You just
do
it. Yeah, you
gotta, that's how you know you've made it, where you can put the mic out. If people sing your stuff, that's true.
So Mortal Kombat is going to flex like that, and we'll all scream in theaters safely now. So, Chris Killian, my final question, I guess, would be, as somebody, I don't assume you have, like, dipped your toe into a whole lot of, like, the more recent Mortal Kombat games. Did that hamper you in any way of understanding?
You are assuming wrong. I don't know why you're assuming this, but I play Mortal Kombat 11 all the time. I have, like, three games that I play, and Mortal Kombat 11 is one of them.
Of course, so, that's it. In this Russian roulette game, I would hit. All right, yeah, but well, you can still count me out. Do you need to be a player of the more recent games to get the full understanding?
No, I don't think so. In fact, my girlfriend watched it with me, and she was not the biggest Mortal Kombat fan. Now, the movie's kind of turned her into a fan, because now she's been like playing the game a bunch with me, and she's like obsessed with some of these characters now. And so she's like she loves Scarlet, and Scarlet's not in the movie, but she's in the game. And so she's kind of turned on to it now because of that. So no, I don't think you have to just strictly be a fan of the games to enjoy the movie.
Everything else I want to ask you is totally spoiler field. So I cannot.
I know, because all I want to do is like, oh my God,
Katana. Like that's all I want to do.
Matt, what about your boy from Power Rangers? He's carrying this movie. How does he do?
Oh, that's right. Yes, that's right. Ludi.
Your boy from Power Rangers?
Yeah, buddy. 2017. Hey. I love you. 2017 Ludi. Reboot. Ludi Lin, man.
Oh, Ludi. Oh, that Power Rangers. I was thinking the show. I forgot about Ludi. Yeah. No, Ludi's great. I love Ludi. He's perfect as Liu Kang. I really enjoy him as Liu Kang.
Now we need a show that's called I Love Ludi. All right. Yeah.
Oh my God, we do.
Yeah. All right. Chris Killian, anything else you want to advertise? I mean, you've done like a lot of interviews, set interviews. Anything you want to point people to before we get out of here? Yeah,
you know, we got a lot of Mortal Kombat stuff planned all week long for the, you know, between the stuff that we did with Chris Casamassa, the original Scorpion, and the interviews that we already posted one interview with the Mortal Kombat cast, which is who would they fight if there was ever a big screen crossover with Mortal Kombat versus DC? Like, who would they want to fight? We made a video for that. That's a lot of fun answers. And then the rest of the interviews are going to be coming out after the movie, because I got so excited about the movie, I asked a lot of spoilery questions. And then they were like, Warner Brothers was like, please don't release this before the movie. I was like, oh, okay, my bad.
No, I do that all the time. I mean, those are the best interviews, though. Those are the ones we really need. Hey, don't let them shake you. Those are the ones we really need.
You're doing your job.
What
man.
Are fans' favorite thing going to be when they see this? No, we don't need that. We need the real spoiler talk. So good for you. Don't let them back you up.
Yeah, a lot. So starting this weekend, we'll have a lot of spoilery interviews coming out, I think, with the cast. It's going to be a lot of fun. So just, you know, check out us on Instagram or on YouTube, you know, at Comic Book.
All right, and I know our comic book gaming team is also going to be all over this movie, so check them out as well. I'm sure they'll have a bunch of breakdowns, explanations, and all the kind of guides you need to help you watch Mortal Kombat and get the full joy and understanding. So we want to thank Mr. Chris Killian for coming on by. I know you got to get out of here. You're always in demand, but thank you for making the time today, man.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
All right.
Catch you later, buddy. Bye, guys.
Bye.
All right, we are going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we are going to talk about the Shang-Chi trailer and that big Marvel casting that just dropped, plus our Falcon and the Winter Soldier theories, and then we got this week's Marvel and DC books to get to, so stay tuned for all of that.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
We are back. So we just discussed Mortal Kombat first impressions with Mr. Chris Killian. Thank him again for being on the show. But now it's time to hop over to the Marvel camp. This week, quicker than I thought was going to happen. It was like a blur on Monday when I was just kind of getting back on the keyboards. We got the first trailer for Shang-Chi, a new kind of breakdown in articles and interviews, new posters. And basically this movie has now just like blipped onto the radar of our Marvel Cinematic Universe Phase 4 after a very long wait. So the trailer is out. You can watch it if you haven't by some miracle seen it already. You can go to comicbook.com Marvel and check it out. I'll go last. Let's go around. What did you guys think of the Shang-Chi trailer? Janelle, let's
go. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Very, very excited. I'm already on this like martial arts excitement with so many different things. Cobra Kai, I binged recently and I'm just crazy about it. Obviously, Mortal Kombat is just showing some amazing fighting and combat and lore and all that stuff. And so me not having a lot of background on this hero and their storyline, I felt like fulfilled by the trailer. I feel like I understood what the story was about. I didn't know who the villain is, but I'm guessing it's the father. It made me want to dig in to understand what the story is about. So of course I went in and started searching like, what are these rings about? Like, where did they come from? What do they represent? Like, now I know what each one represents. And now I'm learning that they're actually supposed to be rings on the finger instead of on the arms. And it's just really exciting because it's like a whole different side of Marvel that I feel like so many people have not tapped into and don't quite understand. And it's like a really fun, exciting time to learn and just get to know this character, the storyline, and everything about it. So I'm pumped. I was so pumped with this trailer. I was jumping up and down. And the fight scenes look so sick. The fight choreography looks beautiful. And I'm pumped. I was really pumped.
Maddie, as our kind of Marvel Comics expert, how are you feeling about this kind of big screen adaptation of Shang-Chi?
Number one, regardless of reading the character in the comics for a long time, I have been pronouncing this wrong like my entire life.
I mean, I've been saying Shang-Chi.
Yeah. I've heard like
I've
so
been
many
saying
different
Shang-Chi since the 80s. The
yeah,
EW,
yeah.
There was an article in EW that was with, I mean, Marvel Studios kind of official article, and they made a point to put it in parentheses to say it's pronounced, and they spelled it out. Yeah. Like
they do that for a reason, yeah, by the way, because like they've heard it mispronounced for a long time. Like typically you only highlight it when it's been pronounced wrong for
is it Song Chi,
yes,
or Shang Chi?
Song Chi.
So yeah, there's you leave the H out. Okay. I've heard that a few times.
Which
too.
Is I mean, which is part of the you know, the Asian kind of in vernacular, not to get into linguistics, but like yes, that is
I'm glad know they told us. Yeah. We
absolutely
need to know.
It's always just like a bummer, you know, when you're like, man,
yeah,
I've been reading.
You find
like,
out you've been doing this wrong.
I'm an idiot. Like, yeah.
Oh, gosh. My favorite
find out, like,
video game and calling the wrong thing for Mankind.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's very much that. So, you know, that was the biggest thing. I was like, really? But, you know, I've never been like the biggest fan of the character. Not in even a negative way. It's just like it's never like he's never been a character that really like resonated with me. So I kind of had open-ended expectations when like this trailer came in. I was like, I just want something cool, bring me into this world, because like I know certain things and I know certain characters, but like I need something to kind of wow me. And I actually think the trailer did a really good job. It pulled me in. I'm I thought all the, like, yeah, we've seen the whole someone being brought into the legacy that they've run away from other life, and we've seen that story before. But I thought this did it in a really relatable way. And it was, you know, it was fun. I dig the martial arts so far. I mean, they didn't show a ton, but the stuff they already showed, and I feel really bad for Iron Fist, because, like, of course, like, that was the first thing that popped up on social media was, like, comparison videos to Iron Fist. And, like, so far it looks really good. Like, it, the stuff we saw looks good. I'm interested to see the other stuff. They even showed, like, a piece of what looks like the final battle later, and that little sequence looked epic. So, yeah, it looked cool. I'm in. I mean, I feel like I'm interested. I will say we've been seeing, and this is, they didn't show this in the trailer, but we've been seeing, like, merchandise pop up already. Like, Marvel just, like, hit with everything on this. Like, figures are popping up in stores, Lego kits are hitting everywhere, and, like, all this stuff is hitting. And we saw, like, this little creature named Morris, and I don't know what this creature is supposed to be, because, like, it has no face. It was very, like, there's so many, I have so many questions about this particular creature. So, like, I'm interested on multiple fronts. So that's me on Shang-Chi.
I guess I'm kind of more not on the negative side, but, like, still on the hesitant side. I don't think this was, like, the most effective Marvel teaser for me. Danu the Pug said it looked like a generic kind of martial arts action movie, and I think that for me that was the first impression. I mean, down to the stereotypes, like, not stereotypes, oh god, it's such a wrong wording, down to the tropes of the genre, where Janelle didn't even know who the villain was, but was like, I'm guessing it's the father, and it's like, yeah, right. I mean, this is all familiar territory, right? And so aside from the colors and production and design look great, like, all of that is very up to Marvel code, but right now the kind of the main character and the hook, I think what kind of interested me the most was just him dealing with, like, this abusive childhood through being made to fight. And that stuff was the most interesting kind of stuff to me, more so than the comic book stuff with Death Dealer and the speed recreation with Awkwafina and the bus and all that. yeah. Seeing the central character of Shang-Chi and his kind of story is the most interesting part to me. I would love to learn more about, you know, We know that the character's not, I mean, is one of his aliases the Mandarin. I forget what his real name is in this, but it starts with a W, I think. But I want to see him as a villain. There's just a lot of confusing shots in this trailer that seems like all over the place. You know, like the old mystical kind of, you know, Asian martial arts wire fu scenes are, like, juxtaposed with, like, the Ten Rings looking like Cobra and whatnot from G.I. Joe with the helicopters and stuff. So it was just a lot. And then there's just kind of, like, average Joe story of a modern, you know, Asian man just kind of, like, trying to live a life and escape this legacy. And it was just all over the place. So I hope this all kind of coalesces into something very solid and organic feeling in its storytelling. Yeah, obviously time is getting to be a tricky thing for the MCU to tackle about questions, but I think this, so that this movie has to kind of take the approach of, yeah, he was trained for all of these years while the MCU came up, but he spent 10 years purposefully, like, not engaging in all of this stuff that's happening
around him. It's plot hole Band-Aid.
Yeah, exactly. until something changes, probably post-blip when, you know, the Mandarin and the Ten Rings organization, obviously you're going to fill some kind of void in this changing world or whatever happens. So there is hints that there is going to be some pretty awesome action scenes in his, the bus scene and just like the double kick and stuff like that. Like, you can't fake some of that stuff. Good. Like that they're pulling off awesome. is looks pretty awesome. And I think we were always consistent in saying, this is our kind of hook for this movie is, yes, we've seen so. I mean, I am a martial arts action, Five Deadly Venoms, like 70s, 80s martial arts. Like, you know, I was going to shady places to get those from imports, like, you know, in my teens. So I'm just looking to see what is distinct about bringing that genre up to a Marvel level and seeing, like, what that ends up looking like. And we've seen hints, quick hints of that, like with the guy in the restaurant and his fist glowing and, you know, smashing the table. I want to see this get real Ryu and Ken from Street Fighter-ish, and, you know, then I think I'll be sold. And I think the next trailer will do that for me. So I'm not hating on Shang-Chi, but I don't think this was, like, my most effective teaser. but it's not as worrisome as what I'm still waiting to see from Eternals, Jim.
Wow. Yeah. I had to throw that jab in there.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, man.
Jay White in the chat says, I knew nothing of Shang-Chi prior to this trailer. To be honest, it seems pretty cool. And I actually obviously relate to this so much. The one thing I'm left with is this a magical land? Is this a, like, is this magic wizard? Like, that's the one thing I felt kind of confused on, because obviously, like, Doctor Strange, you know, he's a wizard, he's mystical, he's dealing with magic. You know, Wanda is a witch and she's magic. And I'm kind of confused, because when I started digging deeper and finding the background behind the rings and, you know, the dragon and stuff like that, I didn't get that from the trailer. So I feel like you have to kind of dive into the comics a little bit to really get the backstory. And that's what I intend to do. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, there's a big question, because there's a lot. I mean, this gets into like a lot of stuff, because Shang-Chi connects to a lot of other things in his origin in the Marvel Universe, some of which is still in that gray area because it was touched on by Iron Fist in like this whole idea of the mysticism and these kind of mystical cities and the dragons and the powers they carry. Like, there is a whole kind of part of the Marvel Universe built off Asian culture and its own fables and lore that conververted that not always very well.
Absolutely true.
Yeah, not always very
absolutely
well.
Absolutely true, yes.
And in some ways very offensively by today's standards. So it's kind of a weird gray area of how they're going to tie this in, because there's also, like I said, the whole Cobra vibe is, there's also obviously from Falcon and Winter Soldier, and we're going to talk about this in a little bit, there's also these kind of organizations that are now springing up, and you can see the gears turning, you know, in the larger MCU about these big organizations who are vying for power and stuff like that. And so there's going to be maybe ties to this and that. And this could weirdly be a weird bridge between the kind of like stuff we're seeing in Falcon and Winter Soldier and stuff we're going to see in like WandaVision and Doctor Strange.
That could be really cool.
I'm torn between what, because like that, to me, that stuff, and this is like some of the things Kofi's highlight in the comics. Yes, there is a blend of mysticism and, of course, like these ties to like ancient cultural things. It all kind of blends together. There's a lot of that. I mean, Fing Fang Foom is this like giant looming presence that like people have talked about. We've even seen in like some Lego sets. Obviously, those don't always pan out.
Yeah.
Those don't always pan out. So like, you know, take it with a grain of salt, but it feels like that's kind of some of the stuff that makes the character and the world fun. And those provide a lot of interesting opportunities to make this different than your formulaic MCU movie. Those are the things that like can help this avoid just becoming another in the MCU factory. But it's like those can be very easily mishandled. Like you can very easily do those wrong, and then you end up with, you know, Thor the Dark World. So like it's weird. I don't know how much I want them to lean into it, but I feel like I want to see them kind of embrace some of that stuff, or at least just bring it into the world as it exists. And then maybe for a sequel, you can really dive into it. But I hope that this is hiding some of that stuff purposefully. But I hope that some of that is just like, it's not apparent yet because they don't want you to see it yet. I hope some of that makes it in, because I will feel like it will ultimately disappoint me if some of that stuff doesn't.
Yeah.
I also think we could get a Wonder Woman style thing where we get like flashbacks to, you know, how the Ten Rings were formed and the ancient battles and, you know, when there were actual dragons and these
other
mythical
animals.
That's
what's more interesting to me.
And, you know, the warriors who were involved in that and what the history of those objects mean. I could see it going that way too, while the modern story is just grounded in more about the crime syndicate and the modern version of all this stuff.
Also, I did see someone note in the comics, yes, I am totally good with not another, I don't need just like rings being swapped out for Infinity Stones. I'm good. I don't need another MacGuffin nothing tying.
But there's 10 of them.
No.
How many movies can we make?
No one needs to go. It's not MCU Pokemon. Don't go collect them all and then put them in your thing and then, oh, I'm ultra powerful. No, stop it.
But don't you think the backstory is so important for this? I mean, for me personally, like that backstory is more interesting to me than this idea of like him living in San Francisco, taking shots and parking cars.
I can see a whole movie of that. Can we just do that? That'll be the movie that really breaks the mold. It's just like following him being a valet.
I mean, yeah. I think that backstory
is important.
I think, yeah, I hope that San Francisco stuff is just act one. But right. Yeah, so yeah. I think it, because I see the backstory coming in when, because somebody's going to have to explain to like when Awkwafina goes to his, you know, father's compound, like what is going on is going to be the obvious question. He'll have to explain all that. So
who I adore in every movie, by the way, and she looks amazing in this already. I love Awkwafina in anything. So
she's awesome.
Yeah.
Normally I'd say yes. I'm jury's still out on what we're going to get here. All right. That's Shang-Chi. Like I said, you can watch the trailer and all our first breakdowns and kind of some of the things that might be buried in the trailer on comicbook.com. Marvel. We also got a big casting in the MCU this week. Our girl, Daenerys Targaryen, the unburnt, first of her name, Emilia Clarke, has joined the MCU like we knew she probably would. She took Star Wars over for that brief questionable period of Solo, and now she's coming to the MCU through Marvel's Secret Invasion series. And I put this on Twitter, and I'm going to say it here. I will not feel vindicated about Game of Thrones ending until I know Emilia Clarke gets to play a Skrull queen with a Skrull dragon whose lover tries to take her out, and she just brutally like feeds him to the dragon and is going to come and take over Earth. Like that's the only thing I will accept.
Wow.
No, but seriously, I mean, that is my guess though. I think we're going to find out, like, you know, there are other Skrulls who aren't so benevolent towards Earth and all of that, besides, you know, and opposed to Talos, and she would be a great pick for a Skrull queen, just, you know, based on the character association with Game of Thrones and all of that. So that's my thing about it. What do you guys think?
Janelle?
I'm thrilled to see her. I love her. I think she's a brilliant actress. I'm curious where they're going to put her. I saw someone say casted her as like Black Cat, and I'm like, no. I've only ever seen her as like this dragon queen figure or like a very sweet like rom-com type role, and I just don't. Yeah, you guys probably haven't seen the movies that I have, but I've seen her.
Don't assume I didn't cry at Last Christmas.
It was good. It was good.
Oh God, it's so good. But I think she's a great actress. I think she really commits to the roles. It seems like, I feel like she does a lot of research, and I feel like if you are going to be playing anything in comics, like, that's one of the coolest things you get to do is really dive into this character, whatever she may be, and understand it. You have so much source material, and I think she's just going to like just excel. I think she's going to fly. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of, well, one, okay, just on its own. I like Emilia Clarke. Like she's awesome, and I like her in a lot of things. I missed out on the whole Game of Thrones thing. COVID will tell you that was not my ship. I never hopped on board. I just never did. So I don't have like the natural affinity from that show that others do. But I've liked her in everything else I've seen her in. I'm not blind. I've seen clips and things like that of her in that show. No, she's awesome, right? But I've seen a couple of casting ties. I actually like Kofi's pick for her casting the most. I actually think she would rock in that queen role of kind of leading this antagonist side of the Skrulls. I actually think that's awesome. I've seen Abigail Brand thrown in as a name. And while I don't doubt her, you know, acting ability or anything like that, I don't just, those roles like just doesn't mesh for me. Like that part with her just doesn't, especially like, I don't love the way S.W.O.R.D. has been handled anyway in the MCU. I think it's just Diet Shield. So I don't necessarily want the same treatment of Abigail Brand because I adore that character. And then the other one I've seen is, of course, one of my favorites, Jessica Drew, Spider-Woman. I think, honestly, Last Christmas is a perfect example of like the things she could bring to that role, just like her just innate likability. But I don't necessarily see that as well, or see that either. Also, the fact that this show is not really... I love Secret Invasion in the comics, but this show so far is not going to be my Secret Invasion. It is going to be something else.
Did you just hashtag not my
Secret Invasion? It's going to be my Secret Invasion. I did. Hashtag it. It's not my Secret Invasion. It's not. It's the Nick Fury show, and that's perfectly fine for us, for a whole set of people. That is not what I give any... I'm trying not to cuss. I don't care about that. I've never cared about that in the books. That's not what that made that storyline interesting. And they have been very clear. Like, this is the Nick Fury and Talos show. And they want to explore the whole intrigue of, you know, the espionage side. And that's fine. But that's not, that's only part of what made the original story great to me. So the fact is, this show's not really going for that. And so I hope to see her in that queen role. I think that would make it more interesting because you'd have an interesting contrast. But overall, I'm not really stoked for this show as much as I thought I'd be. And that bums me out. But I do like the casting. Diatribe gone. Die dark.
All right. There it is. There it is. Yeah, I mean, I'm still curious to see what Secret Invasion is going to shape up to be. There is this huge amount of fan expectation heaped on this because of the title of it. So until we actually know the actual spin and how they're going to approach this, it's kind of hard for me to feel any kind of way about it. I'm happy that Sam Jackson's going to be in it. I love his Nick Fury, and I would love to, I'm kind of interested mainly just to see how he operates and handles all these kind of spinning plates that he keeps in the air all the time with his super spy way. So that's my main attraction, but, that's a good segue into my worry for that series is the same as the worry for the current kind of espionage, less alien inclined series we're looking at right now, which is The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Episode 6 drops this Friday. I was writing about this while writing about a teaser that came out for it. Teaser, it didn't really show anything. But the 6 episodes, I think, have gotten a lot of fans feeling anxious right now. They're feeling like this is ending too quick. And there's a lot to wrap up in just this last episode. Yes, Olivia Coleman is in the comments. Somebody's asking, Alex Cosman is asking, is Olivia Coleman coming to Secret Invasion? And I believe, yeah, we did that casting too, right? That Olivia Coleman. Yep. So she will also be in the show. So she's also eligible to be a Skrull Queen among Skrull Queens. So, Matt, you might see Emilia Clarke in some green hair. I don't know. We could be. Prepare yourself. It would be fun to see her kind of and Nick Fury kind of trading barbs. Like,
I feel like I'm being so negative, and I don't mean to.
No, you're just being you, buddy. It's okay.
I'm just really positive, so I'm making up for both of you.
I have kind of a bipolar thing going on, so it all balances out. All right. But back to Falcon and Winter Soldier. Yeah, there's a lot to wrap up in this last episode. I mean, I just made a list here. It's like, we got to figure out about John Walker. We know in the new Captain America costume coming. What the hell is going on with Julia Louis-Dreyfus's Valentina and whatever larger thing she's a part of? We still don't know who the power broker is. You know, we all want to know where Zemo's going to be at, if there's something more teed up for him. Are we going to get that Thunderbolts kind of tee up as well that we've all been kind of waiting for with this show? Or is it the new Mephisto or Thunderbolts' new Mephisto? There's Isaiah Bradley and his grandson Eli, who keeps getting to say more and more and more as he becomes a young Avenger, hopefully soon. And, like, what's next for this Captain America franchise? Like, is there a new movie, another series? Like, what are we going – like, what's going to – how is this new Captain America at the result of the end of the show going to fit into the MCU? And where the hell is Steve Rogers? Let's add that to the list. So we have to wrap all those, like, kind of things up to kind of make a lot of fans satisfied. Plus, there's a whole big fight at the GRC, the relocation program thingy in New York, where Falcon, Winter Soldier, Walker, and the Flag Smashers and Bat Rock are all going to collide. And, you know, we got to see that whole thing go down. So, guys, do you think they can stick this landing? Because I'm beginning to get a little worried about, you know, these Marvel Disney Plus series. I made a joke at the end of episode 5 on Twitter that, like, really it's feeling like these series so far are just re-origin stories for characters we already know as they get
wow,
as they make slight life adjustments and get new costumes to reflect It's like going through something bad and then changing your hairstyle at the end. You know, go through something that they've been through because, yeah, through the MCU, they hit the gym and then they come out. Yep.
Yeah. Get your nails done.
Yep. Yes.
Can't relate.
Yeah. and then you got a sparkly new costume too. And then you're like, all right, I'm back at it.
Yep. Yeah.
So there you go. Yeah. For the Janelle playbook right there. So yes. I feel like that's what we're getting. I mean, are you thinking we're going to stick this landing, or are you worried about kind of coming out of this with some feelings of disappointment?
Personally, I'll take it first. I hate being negative, but this is the show I have not gotten into. I haven't gotten into the show. Last episode is the first time that I was moved and excited and wanting to really like see more and really looking forward to the next episode, which is the last episode. So for me, it definitely feels rushed no matter what. It's weird to introduce a new giant character in the second to last episode that so many people who don't read the comics have no idea who she is and like what is her role, it's just a lot to take in. I feel weird lately because I feel like I'm straddling this line of like comic book reader and non-comic book reader, because I kind of do have context now. I am kind of understanding. I have been reading more, and every time something like that happens in my mind, I'm like, if I hadn't read this comic, I would be very confused right now. And that just keeps happening in the show for me. Even with John Walker, like if you didn't really have any idea what's going on, you would just kind of, it would leave you in a weird space. So I don't know. I think it's a lot. I'm hopeful, but I'm also not getting my hopes up because I am so fulfilled I'm still so pumped about WandaVision, and I felt like they did such a good job and they sold me on it, and I love it so much and I think it needs season two, that it was just a hard act to follow for me personally. That this show has been hard for me to follow as I'm wearing like a Captain America hoodie. And but it's true. And
bro, what you're wearing around as a Winter Soldier like yesterday?
yes, but that's the other
right.
Thing.
I forgot. Yeah.
I love Winter Soldier. Personally, I love his backstory moments more than anything about this show. Like seeing Bucky struggle to make it out of the Winter Soldier command code and all those things like that, and seeing his past struggle and like fighting and seeing him as Winter Soldier, like just being savage and ripping into people. Like that's my favorite part of the whole show. And those are all flashbacks. So just like you said, Kofi, it's kind of like a backstory episode, or any kind of backstory in this show has been exciting for me. And that's what I like the most. So yeah, I'm kind of nervous. I'm very nervous about where it's going. I know they know what they're doing, but I wish they would have poured some of this stuff into the beginning of the series so that it had more time to like marinate. I just feel like a lot at the end isn't what I was looking for. I was looking for a lot on every episode.
I think that's perfectly said as far as like, I think, no, because I really think, well, one, assuming that this is the Jedi level cameo that we were teased, did this deliver? I understand. I love Julie Louise Dreyfus. Don't get me wrong. But like, Valentina? I was like, I don't like her. I get the can't, like the person behind the character is important and the character is also important, but like not, you know, I don't know. I still think like they got to stop teasing that stuff. They just got to stop it. Like it's never going to live up to the hype ever. So I don't think that delivered, but I agree. I think it would have been better. That would have been an amazing thing to have in the first or even second episode to then be able to slowly drip out details and who is this character. That gives you a much more compelling subplot through line to this series for those who aren't as interested in learning more about Sam or Bucky, you know, and just their current struggles with trying to deal with their position in life now and their position in life before. That stuff interests me. So like, I haven't had the same issues, but I do agree with Kofi that there is some of that retread here. It's not like you couldn't cut parts of this and, you know, this would be a little standalone comic. Like, hey, here's some extra material that's great, but it's not necessarily necessary. I'm in between you guys. I think I haven't heard from Kofi yet, but I feel like, just going off of our last discussion, I feel like I don't think this is going to be completely satisfying for me. Just going off the finale for WandaVision and seeing that we have so many plots to not even close, but at least address before we move forward. That's a lot. Maybe this should have been one more episode this series to really get some of those rounded up. I feel like there's going to be a couple things where we go like, huh, that's disappointing. Like, we didn't really get that addressed, or they left that completely off the table for the next movie. To answer Kofi's other question, I feel like this, all I want to see from this is just set up Sam's movie. That's it. That's all I care about. Like, if we get from point A to point B, the ride will be worth it if Sam's like next step as Cap is solidified and launched. I will come away happy if that's where we get.
I hear that.
Word. I mean, hopefully that's where we're headed. And in the comments, G Gameric or 75, I hope I said that right. Yes, Valentina was supposed to get introduced in the Black Widow movie originally when it was coming out before Falcon and Winter Soldier, which leads, and you can read our theories on comicbook.com, Marvel, about that. I personally believe they're doing this whole Leviathan thing in a different form for the MCU, which is basically there was a master group of spies called Zodiac. They split up, and when they split up, they became S.H.I.E.L.D., Hydra, The Hand, this other group in the Soviet Union called Leviathan. And I think Leviathan is the kind of tie between, you know, what is going on in Black Widow and what is like really behind this new phase of the Black Widow program and all that stuff. And why Florence Pugh's Black Widow will become kind of an active figure in the MCU and be tied to things like Hawkeye and kind of all this other stuff. So I think Valentina is part of that, and that's the organization she kind of represents. Or it could be just her in the new phase of Hydra, because she also did that too and became the new head of Hydra, but it was all just a triple cross. In the comics. So I think all of these things are kind of spinning in the wheels right now, and we're going to see where they pop up. We're going to see what happens at the end of the Falcon and Winter Soldier. Luckily, the fallout of that is Phase Zero's problem. So Friday, you can listen to Brandon Davis and the crew on Phase Zero. Well, they will be reacting right after the Falcon and Winter Soldier finale drops, and you can see who they have on and to talk about that and take that whole thing apart. So don't miss that. All right, Maddie, take us over for comics, our last discussion topics of today. We have some two new books for Marvel DC. What do we got?
So we're going to start with The Way of X, number one, the newest series to branch off from the House Powers of 10 story, Reign of X. I mean, it's got so many dang names now, I don't know. So whatever the current one is, it's great. So this series really deals with of course, deals with Krakoa and things like that, but it really centers on Nightcrawler and his struggle. The character has always kind of presented this really interesting dichotomy within the X books, because he's such a faith-based character. And it's always, at times, clashed with, you know, so many of the pragmatically minded X-Men characters, especially, you know, people like Magneto and Xavier. And this book really tackles some of that and also factors in, you know, immortality. And how you approach that. And I thought that part was actually the most interesting nugget in here, because there are some really interesting revelations for like the rest of the series and how Xavier's past. I mean, a big theme of this particular episode tends to be the past and how it factors into your future. And there's a lot of that in this. But like, to me, the most interesting part of this is Nightcrawler's struggles and attempts to kind of rectify like how faith and a grand macro level look of death and how you look upon life is affected when you've essentially defeated mortality, as Xavier and Magneto constantly say here, and how you approach it. Some really interesting stuff. And it is kind of, I mean, this is, like I read some stuff this week that was like super not weighty at all. And then reading this was like, oh man, like this is definitely one that has a lot of subtext and is, you know, kind of dives deep. So this isn't, you know, a book I would just hand off to anybody, but I feel like it's there's some really rewarding stuff in here. So, I mean, I really liked it. It's a little bit of a dense read in parts, but especially again, I don't know those excerpts that like X-Men fans have come to, I don't know, love or loathe are very much here. To me, they were more additive here than in the past. Sometimes there's a lot of charts and a lot of other stuff that maybe isn't, but the excerpts from the book of the mystery book that's being developed here are worth it to me. Like if you do read them, I feel like you will get more out of the story if you read them in this case. It's not always the case in these X books, but here I thought it was. So I know Janelle has not been the biggest fan of the X-Men books thus far. Now, granted, we have thrown you into like the super duper deep end of the pool. Cause I know, I think the first one you read was like the finale to tennis. Was it Swords? I think it was the finale. And that's like, we should not have done it. But what did you feel about this?
I can now say that this is my favorite X-Men book I've read. I loved the issues that they're presenting. I know that just from knowing where X-Men stands and like what they kind of represent and what they're trying to kind of put a light on is, you know, people being kind of left out by society and, you know, the mutants being treated in terrible ways because they're different. And like all of, I've always respected that and like gotten it, but I never felt compelled by it in the books that I had read. Like that was never, it felt like it wasn't the focus in the books that I read. So this one, I just felt moved by like the story of why they are in Krakoa and, you know, what happened, like any reference to Wanda and what she did to them is exciting for me because I read House of M. And so I was like, oh my God, yeah, I know what they're talking about. Very excited. And, you know, religion is something that is really crazy and hard to deal with in TV shows, movies, tweets, talking to your friends and family if you don't believe the same thing. I mean, it's a very, very difficult topic for so many. And I so related to this. And I just have such a respect that they're willing to go there in a comic book, like with these mutants. And you said it correctly with, you know, bringing people back from the dead. It's like, where does their soul go? And I like that Nightcrawler has his roots in Catholicism, which is hilarious because I can relate to that. I think he said like a reference to Catholic and, you know, I'm on my own spiritual journey and I believe different things. And it was just really cool to like relate to a comic book in this way.
I cannot believe I am hearing this. I know. Listened to this dumbfounded.
After
you tore into me just mere weeks ago about
too many words.
Yeah, how X-Men was so dense and wordy. And this is like the densest, wordiest X-Men book ever. Wordy. And you're like, I love it.
I love it. I like to see a comic book hit these issues. Yeah.
Suddenly I don't think it was about the comic books, Janelle.
No, it's just the content. Like the content was really good. It was something that I can relate to having not have that knowledge of, you know, X-Men, that long.
Or just the host talking about X-Men.
Long.
It was just Kofi loving it. That's what it was like. can't be. Kofi, what'd you think?
I mean, I thought this one was a denser kind of, I had to read it. I made the mistake of making it my last book to read this week. And so I was kind of up against the wire. So I had to read it very fast, but it was very dense. But it did deal. I mean, it's literally kind of like a walking, and this is not to say this offensively, it's like a walking exposition line of everything we've been trying to wonder about ever since House of X pulled this resurrection card out. I mean, it's addressing basically, it's a philosophical like, you know, lecture, not in a bad way again, but like as if you were in a philosophy class and they were like, okay, so we beat death and you know this, And but it does illustrate some of those points in very interesting ways. There are scenes in the book in between the conversations that are very effective. The kids, you know, in kind of having Pixie almost in this weird kind of metaphor for virginity, like not having died before and kind of making fun of her about that. And when they take down that church of Orcus recruits and having somebody kill her just so she can do it for the first time. Yeah. Being like, what's the big deal, Mr. Nightcrawler? Like the young kids are like, what's the big deal? We don't care about death anymore. And Nightcrawler's just like, what is happening? Like, you know, and his struggles with that, like that stuff's interesting because it is, and this has been the real meat and potatoes of this whole Dawn of X thing is the slice of, I mean, for Hickman's credit, for whenever, I mean, for as many times as it has gone wrong, the slice of life stuff when it goes right is very good. And so, you know, these big comic booky ideas, but actually putting them into practice, like, okay, yeah, the X-Men can't die now, but what does that mean? Like, what does that do to you and your culture and your whole idea of identity when you can die infinite number of times and go through this whole Groundhog Day type deal? And yeah, it's interesting to see like the kids start freaking out and thinking like, yo, we can just kill ourselves for fun, you know, because death doesn't matter. And, you know, everything in the continuing debate about the Crucible and how the whole gladiator thing and how mutants, like they only accept people after they die and come back. And now we can embrace you and like all this stuff with your full range of powers for people who don't have powers anymore are like, you know, damaged mutants and things like that. So that stuff is interesting. I mean, there are a lot of heady concepts in this, but man, what a finish. Like, yeah, what a finish. Because we were all kind of wandering in, and I feel like this is pulling from some of the other X books because there has been this, and it's hard to, with all the stuff happening in all these books, to kind of spot the kind of connective thread sometimes. But there has been this kind of invader who's been coming to Krakoa, invading people psychically, like doing all this stuff. And this kind of just really, at the end of all this headiness, is a big major comic book reveal. Can we get in? Are we
yeah,
got
yeah,
spoilers?
Spoilers? Yeah, spoilers.
So spoilers that, like, yeah, Professor X's son Legion is back, and he's seen what's happening on Krakoa, and he's messing with all of this. And Professor X kind of senses him out there and sends Nightcrawler to investigate. And Legion basically looks like it disintegrates him, like, you know, he just like takes him out. But we've been wondering where Legion fits into all of this, right? Because Legion, Professor X's son, David Haller, is, you know, he's famously done some pretty gnarly things. He is like one of the most powerful Omega level mutants. He was kind of noticeably, conspicuously absent from House of X and all of that stuff. And I mean, this is the dude who caused Age of Apocalypse for all those 90 kids when he went back in time and killed his father accidentally while trying to kill Magneto and you know, caused the whole Age of Apocalypse timeline. So Legion
still breaks my heart.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of other things that have happened. I think, wasn't there like a showdown between him and X-Man and like Nate Gray and all that stuff? Like, I tapped out for all that stuff. But
that boy is crazy. Yeah.
But every time he shows up, like, you know, it's a big worldly threat. Like, it is a major threat. And it's interesting to see, like, again, what happens now that there is an Omega level mutant out there who could conceivably really threaten the world again. And like, does it play by any of these rules that Krakoa and his father have set up and maybe very much wants to break them? So Way of X is good. I'm kind of, I didn't know anything about this book going into it. So like, I'm kind of uncertain about like what the larger scope of this series is and like what it focuses on. Is it just kind of just religious questions the whole time? Like, what are we doing?
I don't know. And I also, off the top of my head, cannot remember if this is a mini series or an ongoing. And I honestly can't remember off the top of my head. So it kind of depends on that. Like, is there a story that this particular series wants to tell and they'll launch other things off of in a mini series format? Or is this a full on ongoing? And in that case, yeah, I have some of those same questions. So I think there are plenty of ways to explore that subject matter and spin off for at least more than just one arc. Once though we would get to like, you know, arc three or whatever, then you would have to put some other pieces on the board. I will also say, shout out to Dr. Nemesis, who continues to be one of like the best X characters, because he's just, whether you love him or hate him, he is always interesting, and there are some amazing exchanges between him and Nightcrawler.
He's growing shrooms on his head.
Yeah, he's like growing
that's hilarious.
You know, and explains so many, and like Kofi said, this reaches back all the way to House and Powers, because like the stuff about Moira, the stuff about there's no Seers here. Like all that stuff ties directly back to their decisions back then of like, we don't want anyone that can do that. That those throw variables into the mix and we don't want variables. So like, there's so many cool things. And you know, who's, by the way, just question, and we can even make this a poll. I would almost make that. I might put this on Twitter and make this a poll. Who is the worst father, Xavier or Reed Richards? Who's worse? Because they're both terrible.
Parents. Xavier, because Reed Richards is at least around his kids. You know, he's around raising his kids. Xavier
is
he? I mean, he's around. He's around though. Like, Xavier's kids are like.
Like Xavier, like, you know, like read minds and like manipulated people and like his whole team, his kids of being the X-Men. Plus, you've seen the results of his parenting skills otherwise. But like Reed's also just like Reed is there in presence. He would make an argument for like the most around absent father ever. Like he's always around, but somehow not really there. Anyway, we might run a poll on that. So, okay. So moving on to other things. Let's move on to Justice League number 60, which also deals with some interesting things. But again, we're coming off of Way of X. So like nothing to that degree. This is more a straight up superhero book, but I actually really dug this. Is the most, while we liked, I think the overall impressions of Justice League number 59 was like we really liked it, we enjoyed aspects of it, but like it wasn't, you know, the must read series going out of that. It didn't kind of completely win everybody over. Here I thought some of the interesting ideas we got introduced there actually had a, like Bendis got to play in the toy box he made. And so, like, we set up all the stuff in the first issue so we could get to here. And this is the most Bendis-y DC book in a minute. You know, I've read a lot of Superman run and stuff. And, like, there's some moments. But, like, this is the most – the Bendis stuff I loved from, like, Marvel. This is the most in a DC issue we've got to this point. Some of the banter between the team members, like Aquaman referring to like Batman always talking in the voice, the Black Adam debate with Superman, Green Arrow, because like, I can't remember who says it, but they're like, you essentially lost an argument with Superman by Superman complimenting you. Like those fun little camaraderie things amongst the league I really liked. We also got movement, and I feel like the decision to make Black Adam, to bring in Black Adam and Naomi, and we see a little bit of Hippolyta in this book as well, but so far those two mainly. The decision to bring them into the team is paying off dividends in this issue because they are the most, they have made this league the most interesting it has been in a minute, for a while, actually. They just bring a welcome dynamic to everything, and there's a little bit of chaos in this group, but I feel like it's good chaos. In this respect. And we actually get to like go over to Naomi's world and we start that whole process. So if you're not a Naomi fan, I don't know how much like mileage of this is. You might not love this issue as much. I am. And I've never been a big Black Adam guy, but I love seeing him in the mix with all these other DC heroes and the personalities clash. So to me, this issue, like I loved. But what did you guys think?
I think what they've done in Bendis is doing in Justice League what I think only Bendis could do in a certain kind of way, which is pulling kind of keeping the core intact while pulling character switches that are add interest, like just specifically Hippolyta and Black Adam taking the place of a Wonder Woman and a Shazam, for instance, and doing those character swaps. Like you said, it adds all kinds of new dimensions of tension and interest to the series, because now you have a guy, you know, while Batman can kind of go up against Superman, you know, ethically and philosophically and morally, Black Adam can actually go up against Superman, you know, when they have a disagreement. Hippolyta and Black Adam just, you know, have this tension that could go either way. I wouldn't be surprised if they're making out in a few issues or whatever. But and just kind of moving the pieces of the Justice League around that they're familiar but feel fresh and new is a hard thing to do. And he's sticking to some tried and true comic book story tropes, which is, you know, dimension destroyed by super people and all the twists we could get about who those super people are. And now just a world that basically whittles it down to, like Naomi says, it's just like, these are just the survivors, which means they're the most brutal fearsome, you know, superpowered people out there. And there's in like as a planet of all of them who are left. And this, we've seen this kind of Justice League story before. They're usually pretty exciting with, I'm trying to think of like U-Man and all them, the Justice Syndicate, or what are they called?
Oh, the Crime Syndicate?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And that whole thing. And like, yeah, so this has a feeling to be kind of fresh in that way. It worked for Venom Beyond not too long ago, this same kind of thing. Yeah. And so I feel like this is going to be exciting and comic booky in the best way. And I thought this issue at least laid down more interesting groundwork than the previous issue.
Agreed. Janelle?
Yeah, pretty much same thoughts. Kofi said it perfectly. Just really excited to see where it goes. No complaints. Just I know what's going on. That's always the most important thing. I know what's happening. I can understand the story. I know where they're going to go from here. And I'm just excited to see it. I'm not really too critical about this one. It felt good reading. I liked it.
Awesome. And then real quick, before we got to run here, we will give a quick shout out to Women of Marvel number one, a collection of short stories, in some cases like one page. There's just a lot of different stories. A lot of them, this is more, a lot of them are lighthearted in nature. So if you are looking for something, you know, not Way of X, this is actually a perfect book for you. Of course, it spotlights women creators. And there's a lot here. I didn't love this collection as much as I was kind of hoping to. But I will say, definitely read the Marrow and Feral storyline that's in there, which is Give a Cat a Bone. I actually really dug that. Kofi knows, like, I'm a big fan of these, like, D-list X-Men characters. Meryl is one of them.
Yeah, that was the new wave. That was part of the new wave. It was Celia Reyes, Maggot.
Oh, man, yes.
Marrow. No, one day. Introduced in the mid-90s as, like, three big new X-Men characters. And everybody was like, what is happening with X-Men?
Eeny and Meeny for life, man. So I thought this was fun just because it fit the personality of Meryl well. So I just thought it was nothing. There's no necessary reading, I feel like, in this issue, but I thought that was fun. Did you guys have any of the stories you wanted to highlight most?
I just liked it in general. I liked it a lot because we talked about earlier, you know, when you go through breakup, you get your hair done, you get your nails done. Like, there's so many references to kind of girl culture. Like, I just dug it. I was like, I related to so many different things. Like, Hella is struggling sleeping, so she gets her dog instead of a weighted blanket to lay on top of her, and that's the story. But it's like, I literally slept with a weighted blanket last night, and like, I relate to it. Or like, you know, we get our nails done in one of the comics, and they're like, just, she's like, turn them into weapons, and they're just blinged out like scary nails at the nail salon. And I just related to a lot of these little girl stories. And I love the Gamora story. That was probably my favorite one.
Oh, that was good too. Yeah, that was good. Kofi, what'd you think?
I didn't get a chance to get into this one. Yeah, I got through, like I said, I got through the other two books because I was busy. So, but
there's a lot this week. Other quick shout outs.
Wait, you said a Marrow and Feral story, and that had me as soon as you said it.
There you go.
Concept. Yeah.
See? Yeah.
I was like, my eyebrows went up, like, oh, now you have my interest.
It was fun. Other quick shout outs would be the Captain Marvel kicked off its kind of official Doctor Strange Captain Marvel team up crossover thing that's kind of currently happening. If you are a fan of either of those two characters, I know Janelle is a huge Doctor Strange fan. I will say I really love this. It's a pairing I would not have necessarily predicted, but they do some really fun and interesting things with it. And if you've been keeping up with the Captain Marvel series, they're also kind of playing with all the future timeline stuff that they've introduced. So there's a lot of interesting stuff there. So that would be one I'd highlight, but that's comics.
All right. Thank you, Matt. Quick shout outs. I wanted to shout out just a couple random things that I just thought I'd highlight this week. I'm watching Versus. If you guys aren't watching Versus Battle, if you're hip hop or R&B fans, Versus have become like the new concert since the pandemic started. They get famous hip hop or R&B artists together, and they say it's a competition for them to kind of do tracks from their library that are hits and stuff like that and see who wins. But it just turns into an awesome music celebration. So Redman and Method Man did one yesterday. It was great. Those are fun. They're really great events. I invite you to watch. Helen McCroy passed away, the actress James Bond. and Harry Potter, but she's probably most known right now for Peaky Blinders. And in my discussions about her death, I realized there's still a lot of people who have not seen Peaky Blinders or don't even know what it's about, even though it's been hanging around Netflix forever. But if you haven't checked that out, Peaky Blinders is about an early 20th century gang of gypsies in the UK. It's led by Cillian Murphy, who plays the leader of the gang, Tommy Shelby. It's the Shelby family. And they're called Peaky Blinders because they wear their like little caps and they keep razor blades in them that they use to cut people's faces. And it's basically a crime story. It's Sopranos. Thomas Shelby is a very troubled crime lord who does things in kind of early 20th century Britain and leading this gang. And the current last season was all about them hitting the Great Depression and how it made the gang scramble again. And Helen McCrory played the matriarch of the gang named Polly. And she was, I mean, just like phenomenal. One of the best TV gangsters of all time. And she in Peaky Blinders is really good. So it's on Netflix. Check that out. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Danny the Pug. Yeah. It also has Tom Hardy as a Orthodox Jewish rabbi crime lord. And you can't understand a lot of what he says, but it's pretty amazing stuff. Peaky Blinders is a great show. So. Other thing I'm going to shout out is I rewatched Predators. Predators, the Robert Rodriguez reboot of the franchise in 2010s. And I was doing this, you know, this job back then. But I'm having this weird experience of going back now and watching a lot of the stuff from the 2010s, like now a decade later, and just being like, man, Twitter, what a waste of time film Twitter really is. Because, like, you go back and but, like, seriously, this is a diatribe at the end of the show. Like, what a waste of freaking time film Twitter really is. And all of these kinds of things. I remember how much scrutiny this movie got when Adrian Brody was like,
oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember that.
Every little piece of this we took apart, and I played a part in that. I did that, and it got like middling reviews because of this and that and the other. And it's like, now I go back and just see the test of time, and the internet has forgotten about this stuff. It's on Hulu. You can stream Predators, and you watch it again. I'm like, man. That was just like a good, fun time, and I would like to see more Predators type stuff. It's so much better than that Shane Black crap we just got, like, and I would have loved to see this continue. But no, internet had to internet, and we all had to take the part and just do that. And it's like, film Twitter, retrospect, we're going to look back at, like, film Twitter and be like, man, we were really effing up. But, yeah. Anyway, Predators is streaming on Hulu. Check it out if you want. And Matt, you had something you want to shout out?
Yeah, for my fellow X-Men fans, and tabletop fans, Marvel United X-Men is like, if you're an X-Men fan and you've been looking for like a game, it's like every dream character so far has like popped up in this game. Like Omega Red is the newest stretch goal. It's on Kickstarter now. We're going to have a full preview and a video of like how to play coming soon, and you can check out all our coverage on comicbook.com of it. But like at this point, it's like Dazzler, Emma Frost, so many Sunfire, so many characters are like in this game already, and I'm just praying that we're gonna get Maggot. It's gonna happen. We brought him up earlier. Matt's agenda. If you, for the love of Lord, I want this to happen so bad. So I would love to see some of those 90s characters hit this game. But you can check out all our coverage on the site. That's me.
Oh, yeah. I started watching Harley Quinn. It was recommended so many times. The animated series on HBO Max. Yes. Awesome. Totally forgot I wanted to shout that out. This was because of the viewers. Everyone was saying, Janelle, you got to watch this. And I am just loving it. It's so good. So
yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
Omar the Knight. I will definitely be watching that Snowfall finale tonight. One of the best shows on TV since The Wire. The comparisons get made all the time, but they don't need to be compared. Snowfall is its own thing, and it's great. Finale of this season. This season has been just. I think this is the season that really is going to put it on the main, like more of a mainstream map. So, yeah, Snowfall finale's coming. I'll be checking that out as well. That'll do it.
Peaky Blinders.
Oh yeah, I mean Peaky Blinders is good.
I missed that. I missed that train.
Oh, good. Peaky Blinders is on Netflix. Snowfall is on Hulu FX. Like, you can stream these things. There are some great shows, crime drama shows out there if you guys want to really get into those. All right, that'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. Thank you guys for tuning in. As always, we are all on your favorite streaming platforms, including iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and, you know, all the rest. New episodes are up every Wednesday. And if you love the show, go on Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star review. If you're looking for us, if you're watching the live video, we go live every Wednesday at noon on Twitch. YouTube and Facebook, but you can always watch back on any of those platforms if you missed the live stream. If you want to see us, any of us, or talk to us, we are at our various Twitter handles. You can see on the screen if you're watching, if you're listening. I am at Kofi Outlaw.
I am Matt Aguilar CB.
I am at Janelle Wheeler.
And thank you guys again for tuning in and riding with us. We will be back next week, and I'm sure we'll be talking about Mortal Kombat, the Falcon Winter Soldier, and a whole lot of other stuff that's probably going to drop in between. So we will see you guys then. This is Comic Book Nation, and we're out.
Peace.